Chinua Achebe has been called the father of modern African writing, and tonight the Penn American Center will present a tribute to his seminal work of African literature, Things Fall Apart, a celebration of the novel's 50th anniversary of publication. And the event at Town Hall promises to be spectacular, with an international roster of writers that includes Toni Morrison, Edwidge Danticat, Hajin, and Chris Abani. The book is being released in a special anniversary edition by Anchor, and I'm pleased to welcome to this show now both Mr. Achebe and Mr. Abani, whose latest book is a novella called Song for Night, which is being published by Akashic. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Chris, you are also from Nigeria. When did you first read Things Fall Apart?
I was 10, I think, when I first came across it.
And you understood everything? Well, we were precocious. You wrote your first novel when you were in your teens.
Yeah, so I was a precocious reader. But it's interesting. I had sort of read all of the Russians and a lot of the Victorians English before I came to Things Fall Apart.
Was it already considered a classic in Nigeria? Was it taught in the schools?
It was taught in the schools. It was considered a classic, as rightly, you know, it should have been. But, you know, when you're in the culture, when you're part of it, you don't always, particularly too if you feel like you're growing up within the world that is being referred to, that you don't sort of always understand the intervention of imagination that it took to create the text, and you take a lot of it for granted.
And also, when something is presented as a classic, as something that you should read,
right.
There's an automatic resistance. I remember speaking to somebody, a Japanese friend, and I said, you know, I just love the Tales of Genji,
maybe the first
novel ever written. And he said, oh, I hated that book. We were forced to read it in school.
And I
suspect most American kids who grew up reading Julius Caesar in school have problems with Shakespeare for a while.
Yeah, but that's also interesting too, because this is where sort of there was a little strange dynamic with colonialism, because we actually grew up loving Shakespeare. And initially, I used to think that it was because we ascribed anything having come from England as being wonderful. But as I actually, when I did read Things Fall Apart and sort of understood more and more, even though with the language I was speaking, which was Igbo, the intricacies of Igbo, I realized that the attraction to Shakespeare was actually about the language, was about the ability to the gift of the gab with it, essentially. Yeah.
Well, interestingly, Things Fall Apart is written in English.
Right.
And you've also written in English.
Right.
You could have written in Igbo.
I wish I could say yes completely to that. I grew up speaking Igbo, learning Igbo in school. But Igbo, for me, largely occupied the language of communication and not the language of imagination. So because I grew up reading all my books in English, essentially, sadly, that my imagination is sadly rooted in English. And recently I've been trying to write in Igbo, and there are two wonderful things that have happened. One, of course, is a frustration, and the second thing is I feel like Chaucer, in a sense, that I'm inventing a sort of a new Igbo that can be used to contain my imagination. So,
because there isn't enough of a literary Igbo available to a writer?
There isn't, and also because this is part of the erasure of the post-colonial education, which was that Igbo was not centralized as much as it should have been. And so while it was spoken at homes and throughout the community, most of us didn't learn the value of it until much later.
Well, I remember talking with the great Senegalese filmmaker Ousmane Sembène, and he made his first film in French because that was the language of the colonial Senegal.
Right.
And he had lived in France for many years.
Right.
And he said when he took it around to the villages, everybody asked him, why isn't this in Wolof so we could understand it? Why do we have to have it translated for us?
And that's the thing I think that differentiates, I think, or marked Igbo art differently from the Yoruba art. I think that in Yoruba literature and even Hausa literature was more invested in the indigenous language, and maybe we're too good at assimilation as Igbos. Who knows?
So most of the writing from Yorubans and from Hausa are in their languages. It's only the Igbo who have tended to create this Nigerian English language literature?
Well, no, that's not entirely true. But what I'm saying is that even what I would call the pulp mass literature, in Yoruba land and in Hausa land still remains in those languages, but even the mass market literature for the Igbos was always in English. So there are obviously Yoruba writers and Hausa writers writing in English, but they have a whole sort of corpus of work, more than we do, I think, in Igbo.
Well, since you say that there was a certain amount of resistance when you were growing up, two things fall apart. When did you realize that this was a work of great profundity?
I would probably say I was maybe struggling with my first serious. Well, I mean, my initial novels were serious, but they were more thrillers. And when I really began to confront the idea of writing a literary fiction in my early 20s, I really sort of came across come into terms with Things Fall Apart first, but I also, one of my favorites is Arrow of God with Ezulu, but with Okonkwo, sort of realizing what the real power of Things Fall Apart was in the context of African literature wasn't always, or for me, isn't necessarily the idea of access or the recreation of a pre-colonial Nigeria, but in creating a complete rounded individual in Okonkwo, the first psychological character, I think, in modern African literature.
Well, there's also the creation of a sense of a national literature in general, isn't there? I mean, when up until a masterpiece is written, you can have an awful lot of books, but then the masterpiece changes everything.
Right.
Now, Chinua Achebe, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Last year, you were awarded the Man Booker International Prize for your entire body of work, and you've received many other awards, and now this tribute, which will be at Town Hall tonight. When you wrote the book back in 1958, I assume you never imagined this sort of success, but were you conscious of writing for a Nigerian audience, for an Igbo audience, or for the whole world at that time?
I was writing for the whole world. But beginning with myself, I was writing for myself, for my people, people who had the same history as I had, Nigerians, Africans, the world. That's how I can put it now. I did not want to exclude anybody, but I knew that this was a peculiar story of mine. I was almost mesmerized in its writing. You know, I would not, you know, even if I wanted to, I couldn't avoid it. It seemed to have that compelling power that this must be done. This must have got out of the way.
You mean it was an itch that you had to scratch? is that how this novel actually developed?
Well, I knew I had a story, and that story insisted on coming out, on being told. That's all.
Well, it's been translated into over 50 languages, sold millions of copies around the world, so you must be gratified that it did reach the kind of audience that you hoped you would reach. But it was published in England first. Could it have been published in Nigeria at the time?
There was no facility in Nigeria at that time. At this time in Nigeria, there is very little facility for real publishing, and so that's it came out where it was possible for it to come out, which was through British publishers.
Was it the first publisher you sent it to?
You mean my publishers in England?
Yeah, did you send it and have them say, "We love this, Chinua. We're going to publish it immediately"?
No, it wasn't anything as easy as that. there were some people who saw it, and a handful of people. I was at the BBC staff school And there was a teacher there that I showed it to. He was a novelist, and he liked it and offered to show it to his own publishers. But after that, there were all kinds of problems, like the manuscript was nearly lost, and so on. So it didn't have the kind of easy passage that your question suggested.
I've been talking with Chris Abani, and we talked about why he wrote in English, and he said, Chris, forgive me for paraphrasing, but he said that there just wasn't enough of an Igbo language to be able to carry a literary novel. Was that a problem for you as well? Is that why you wrote it in English, or would you have had, or was English the only language you could imagine writing it in?
No, I think it was the nature of the country and my environment and my history. My education, remember Nigeria at that time was very firmly a British colony. And our educational system was in English. And I therefore came equipped with English language as a literary language. But I spoke Igbo, and that was my mother tongue. And what I then did, I wouldn't say I decided to do, what I did was to find a dialect, to invent a dialect that would hold the a kind of conversation for translating what I had in mind. And this dialect was the English language in conversation with the Igbo language.
And you've included a fair number of Igbo words and phrases, which you then provide translations for in a glossary in the back, because there were certain things that just could not have been said in English?
Yes.
But I'm sure you were thinking in English when you were writing, or do you think that because you grew up bilingual, at least, that one language enriches the other language?
Yeah, that's it. That's where I was. And for me, it was a very exciting possibility. It was all a kind of hope rather than belief. It's not something I had done before. It was not the kind of language that you saw in other books. It was something peculiar, and there was no guarantee that it was going to work.
Chris Abani, Salman Rushdie has claimed that the language, the English of people who grew up in former British colonies have enriched English literature because they brought something that you couldn't have had in England, and that was the sensibility, the language sensibilities of those other countries.
Yes.
Was that the case for you as well?
Yes. Yes, it was. And it's also it raises some problems for me because you have to be thinking of the mother tongue being, as it were, short-changed in this transaction, and therefore thinking also, you know, what do I do to remedy this situation, to end the impoverishment of the Igbo language? So it's not a simple affair. It has its problems, it's moments of excitement and it's moments of great doubt.
Maza Chebe, there was a.
Oh, Kedu Kodi.
Adam Mandau.
Kedu Onyen Kene.
Oh, Chris Abani, sir.
By the way, we have subtitles. We're going to provide subtitles.
Okay.
Yes, sir. It's a real pleasure.
I'm delighted to hear your voice.
Same here. And I really love the answer you gave. And to carry forward on that answer, too, is in sort of the development of the way, in a sense, that Igbo syntax and sort of thinking, the philosophical thinking you brought with Igbo proverbs and Igbo cosmology into the English, is also a wonderful site of resistance and subversion of the dominance of English. In other words, where English is reclaimed by what is perceived as a former colony, and in that way shapes and changes the imagination of the mother country. So, you know, if you want to think about it in that way. So in that way, it's always a site not only of sort of confrontation and possibility, but also a site of resistance.
Well, Chinua Achebe, you've written about novels that have been written by non-Africans about Africa, like Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness and Joyce Carey's Mr. Johnson. They're also using English, but to a very different end?
Yes. Yes, that's the center of the discussion. Because what we have said, what Chris Abani has just said, that's very true. You might think of what I was doing as a response to what had been done in English by such people as you mentioned, Conrad and Joyce Carey and a whole lot of other people. It is because they presented a picture of a people that they did not respect, a picture of Africa that was virtually devoid of the human, and it is because of that that my response had to be in the same language in which this deprivation was performed.
Engaging in a dialogue with those other books, or to counter the European view?
It's both. It's both. When it's open and straightforward and respectful, there is a conversation. When there is almost, what shall I call it? When there's a lack of respect, where there is a denial of what we treasure as human,
we have to take a little break. Can we come back to that thought?
Okay.
My guests are Chinua Achebe and Chris Abani. Well, Chris Abani will be one of the many luminaries celebrating the 50th anniversary of Chinua Achebe's great novel, Things Fall Apart, tonight at the town hall as part of a Pan American Center presentation. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We're back with Chinua Achebe, who is being honored tonight, a special tribute by Pan American Center at Town Hall. It starts at 8 o'clock. It's to celebrate the 50th anniversary of his great novel, Things Fall Apart. And joining in the festivities, Toni Morrison, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, Edwidge Danticat, Seher Hamad, Hajin, Colin McCann, and Chris Abani, who is also with us right now in the studio. Chinua Achebe, why did you take a phrase from W.E.B. Du Bois, a whole other story. William Butler Yeats' famous poem, The Second Coming, as your title.
Because I loved the poem. And it seemed to me somehow to carry the notion of the cycle, the great cycles of history, of things succeeding others. And I was quite struck by the way it stated what I felt was the relationship between the old religion of my people and the newcomer to them, the Christian faith.
The lines, things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. It kind of describes a lot of about what you've written in this novel.
Yes. Well, it struck me that the poem is a very great source for understanding the condition of the world at that moment of transition in which people left their faith to seek a new religion. And my parents were among those. My father was one of the earliest converts to Christianity. So the notion of the change, of the importance of newness, which almost obsessed the early Christians. My father gave, the name he gave his first son was the new word, which is the way of referring to the gospel, the new word. And it was not in doubt that the new word was better than the old word.
Now, Nigeria is a country of religious converts because the old religions, a few remain, but mostly you have Islam in the north with the Hausa. You have Christianity in the south with the Igbo, and the Yoruba mostly Christian as well?
Yes.
So everybody had to contend with conversion to some degree. This was the novel was also published just a couple of years before Nigeria achieved independence. So that was another transition.
Yes.
Was that something that people were aware of at the time?
Oh, of course. Of course. It was very much in the air. And Nigeria was in the thick of it, leading it, this sense of an impending political change. Leading it was the Gold Coast under Kwame Nkrumah, and Nigeria was part of second in line.
Well, you had Tafawa Balawa, who turned out to not be everything one would have hoped.
Yes. Well, Nigeria found, we found independence was not what we thought. It did not deliver what it had promised. And that's really where Nigeria got stuck. That's where we are still today.
Well, Chris Abani, you grew up in the early years of independence. Was there a sense of optimism at that time?
Well, I was born just as the Civil War was starting.
In Biafra.
But my father returned to Nigeria in 1957 from Oxford and in the First Republic in 1960 was actually a member of parliament. So there was a real sense of optimism. And you only have to read a lot of, because it was an amazing amount of political literature that emerged at this time. Nnamdi Azikiwe is writing, Obafemi Awolowo is writing. Literally everyone who was involved in some way with that sort of early independence struggle wrote these really interesting books that were that also stated their ideals and their hopes for the country. And I think that the real problem began, I think, when the contention of 250 ethnicities, with three dominant ethnicities who had, even though the Igbos didn't have empire in the way we think of it, we certainly had an ideological empire, sort of begin to clash in this way, and religion simply is in service of those political ideologies, and that's where it all began to fall apart, I think.
Well, you were imprisoned after the release of your first novel, Masters of the Board. Yeah. You'd written that when you were a teenager. What was in it that got you thrown into jail?
Well, I mean, this is happening way after all of the possibilities. This is when the military are fully entrenched.
But it's just the 70s.
Well, no, it was 80s.
Oh,
it was
80s.
83, yeah. So this was really at the heart of the military regime, by which time any real hope we had of democracy had vanished. And so it wasn't really so much, in my case, what was in the book, but it was rather an accident of who had the book and who was thought to have used the book. Vata was believed to have used the book as a blueprint for a coup. So that came much later, I think, in the day. When you know, really, in many ways, I think the Biafran War and the genocide of the Igbos really caused everyone to lose faith in this enterprise called Nigeria. And I think because we haven't addressed that trauma, I don't know that we can move forward from it.
Mm. Chinua Achebe, your novel, the one we are discussing anyway, Things Fall Apart, contains details of village life that might seem cruel to Westerners, like men beating their wives, killing innocent people to appease the gods, or abandoning infant twins after birth. Are these things that, I'm thinking back to our conversation about Joyce Carey and Joseph Conrad, are these things that can only be told by someone from within the culture? If they had been written about by a foreigner, would they come across as something different?
Well, I think it all depends on the attitude of the writer. If somebody was, for instance, men beating their wives, that happens everywhere. It happens in this country. And if one wrote about it as if it happened nowhere else, then there'll be some problem with that. Now, what I made sure I did not do was paint a lovely picture of my people to make them look like angels instead of humans that they were. And so I practically went out of my way to find these examples you gave to make sure that they were in the story. Because that, the fact that you had cruelty in society does not mean that those people were not human. So it was almost a challenge what I was doing is, okay, I will present all the terrible things that these people do, and I will challenge you to deny their humanity on that account. Mm.
You also give us a view of white missionaries and colonialists that we might not have been able to have any other way. Talk about challenges. I understand you're writing a translation of Things Fall Apart in the Igbo language. I was surprised to learn that it hasn't been translated until now. Are you having to invent things? I talked earlier with Chris Abani about the certain paucities in the language. Are you having to invent things in the language the way Shakespeare had to invent things?
I think we all do that, you know, to some extent. There are enough things to make a story, but there are also possibilities outside the specific language. Language grows as long as one is not forcing the language to move in any particular direction, because that is beyond the capacity of any one person. Language is owned by all the people who speak it. And there's constant enrichment and change going on. And a writer who wants to listen can make use of this, of these facilities.
Now, you've written a lot of essays since you came here, but your last work of fiction, the novel Ant Hills of the Savannah, was written before you moved to the United States,
yes,
where you have been teaching. Chris Abani's also come here after he escaped from jail and went to England and eventually wound up here teaching. Do you find it difficult to write about life in Nigeria, at least in fiction, while living away from the country?
Well, you do miss something. There are things you miss when you are, for me, I'm not laying down the law for anybody else. There are things that would be easier for me to do in the environment in which I lived before, and in which my storytelling took root. But if that's not possible, as has happened in my case, or if it is difficult, as it is in my case, then you do what you can. There is also room for essays. There is room for any kind of writing you want to do. There will be room for a novel when the time comes for it.
Well, Chris Abani, one of your novels, The Virgin of Flames, was set in Los Angeles, where you right. now live. But your most recent work is a novella called Song for Night, which describes in horrific detail the life of a boy soldier whose job it is to defuse landmines.
Right.
Did you have to go back to Nigeria to research this?
It's interesting, too, because I think that for me, I carry Nigeria within me wherever I go. So I don't perhaps feel the same sense of dislocation. But, I grew up, as I said, at the cusp of the war, returned to Nigeria after the war, grew up in all the sort of detritus of that war. And so all of that melancholy, all of that loss is very familiar to me. I grew up with all of that. So I didn't essentially need to return to do it. I sort of worked out of memory and out of text that exist. I mean, there's lots of books written by Nigerians about the Biafra War. So it was easy to put together the material and allow my imagination to sort of do its thing.
A reminder that Chris Abani will be one of the many writers celebrating Chinua Achebe on the 50th anniversary of his novel Things Fall Apart tonight at Town Hall. One of the authors involved, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, actually paid a little homage to Things Fall Apart with the opening line of her first novel,
right. Yes.
Purple Hibiscus.
Right.
I guess the traditions continue, writer to writer.
Right.
I want to thank the both of you so much for being with us, Chris Abani and the great. Oh, not that Chris isn't great, but Chinua Achebe has
Chinua Achebe is the great.
Been great or longer, anyway. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
And as I said, Chinua Achebe, Chris Abani, and other celebrated writers, including Toni Morrison and Ha Jin, will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the publication of Things Fall Apart tonight at 8 p.m. at Town Hall, 123 West 43rd Street. That's between 6th and 7th Avenues. It's presented by the Pan American Center, and more information is on our show page at WNYC.org. Up next, former White House Press Secretary Dee Dee Myers on why she thinks the world would be a better place if more women were in charge. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We're also heard on satellite.